Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, or Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. Thank you, patrons, including Neil Horton, Blitz Krieger, great name, probably not their real name, Mike Burek, Thomas Fayens, who are all supporting us live, as well as people listening to us live in the chat room. We've got Battery HQ, we've got Charlotte, we've got John, we've got Camille, we've got Pangolin Sandwich, we've got Richard Taylor, and of course, Ian, I have you. And where there is you, there is only sweet, sweet happiness. But you can join all of those people and get access to our full-length ad-free show, our Patreon-exclusive weekly sister show, Extra Message, and get access to our wonderful Discord community, which I have to say has been it's been figuratively on fire recently. The community
not
is...
Not literally.
Yeah, exactly. Figuratively on fire. It's been lacking in flames, but absolutely hot with action. It's been great, like a 70s porn flick.
I was chuckling there because I just thought about the idea of someone coming out in the delivery room at the hospital, and the parents going, "Looks like a Blitzkrieger to me."
I'm pretty sure that's what happened as you slithered into this world. But anyway...
But they went with Ian anyway.
It was probably for the best, mate.
probably, yeah.
Let's talk about Skyqua, or SkyQ, as the company pronounce it. It's launched on Sky 3 new channels. In fact, let's put this a different way. Sky has launched 3 new on-demand nature programs featuring High Dynamic Range, or HDR, as it's known to its friends, for SkyQ customers, those with the SkyQ box. The BBC story here explained that HDR offers a greater range of colours, making pictures more vivid and realistic than before. Ian's going to explain a little bit about that in a few moments, but Sky viewers, in order to get access to this, will need a Sky 1TB or 2TB set-top box and a Sky Experience or Ultra HD subscription to see the difference. Now, before we get into how HDR works a little bit, this all coincides with the launch of Sky's new Nature channel on Wednesday. The BBC, again, still writing here. The first programmes are going to be available on demand with HDR, are in fact all nature documentaries. Do you want to hear what they are?
Yes, please.
They are Gangs of Lima Island. There are 5 episodes of that. There's Pride Lands, Wilderness Reborn, 1 episode of that. And there's Malawi Wildlife Rescue. 5 episodes of that. Now, Sky also confirmed it planned to broadcast the 2021 Olympic Games live in HDR as well. And there'll be a bunch of other programs that that join the platform in HDR, including movies, which is probably the most exciting thing for the average person who doesn't have a specialized interest in something like nature. So this is all very good news. We've talked on the show a lot of times in the past about how HDR is arguably more important than 4K in terms of the difference it might immediately make to your viewing, depending on how big your TV is and how far away you are from it. But SkyQ getting this presumably is something that would intrigue you, Ian, as something of a cinephile.
Yeah, that's a good word to describe it. Although that obviously refers mainly to cinema, but cinema has high dynamic range as well. In fact, film is one of the best ways to get high dynamic range because it captures a lot more light naturally, and so you know, you could go back to films that recorded, you know, 30 40 50 years ago and still get an HDR signal, you know, manage to get an HDR information out of it. So I looked into this a bit. They seem to be using hybrid log gamma, which is what the BBC used. Hybrid log gamma is common in broadcast, so with a TV broadcast it's not necessarily practical to send a signal constantly for HDR. So what you do is you send a signal at the start that tells the TV what sort of range it should expect, and then it adjusts itself and it should present a reasonably good image. My understanding, and I'm not the world's most authority on this anymore because I no longer do this for a job, is that that's not perhaps the best way of doing it, because you could have scenes in a show that would be better if they were categorized independently.
But it, but in as an explanation of the scene difference, and the thing is that you may have a scene where it's extremely bright and you want to bring up those lows, so that would need a different sort of color range, and then there may be a scene next to it that's incredibly dark where you need to bring up the lights, and so one sort of, for want of a better description, one palette of colors or available brightnesses wouldn't necessarily be optimal for a program that contained very dark scenes and very light scenes and scenes in the middle. So it's, you're saying it's what Sky Q's using is more of an adaptive way that can adjust.
They're using Hybrid Log Gamma, which I believe does the same thing. Actually, I might just cheekily Google that to check while we're talking. But the way I always describe it is the easiest way is if you take a video camera and you record someone in a room in front of a window, you can usually choose to expose for what's outside the window or what's inside the room. So if you want to go for what's outside the window, the person's face would be silhouetted and you probably wouldn't be able to see very much detail at all. HDR, in an ideal situation, would, the idea being that you could have both. You could have enough dynamic range to see what's outside the window and enough dynamic range to see what's the person's face. And obviously, it's not quite that simple because there's obviously a huge range there. And the human eye is exceptionally good at adjusting in this way. But cameras have to choose. They have to pick a range. And one of the explainers that I found said that you get about... what is it? It's something like 13 stops of... available light in an HDR image, whereas on a normal TV you get between 6 and 10 ish, I think. And so anyone who's a photographer who's taking photos will be able to tell you about the importance of dynamic range in still photos and what options that gives you after the fact, so you can tweak things. So for nature, this kind of stuff works pretty well. I think HDR is one of those things where it's very easy to implement on a TV. It's quite hard to get a TV that does it really well because brightness is the most important thing. You need to have a TV capable of producing a lot of brightness. And the best ways of doing that would be something like an OLED, which produces quite a lot of light, not the most amount, or a direct backlight where you have little tiny LEDs behind the screen that provide the illumination. And ideally, perhaps quantum dots, which help adjust the color in a better way, thus reducing the filtering that happens before the backlight, giving you more light. So if you've got an OLED or a QLED, you're probably onto a bit of a winner when it comes to high dynamic range. I've got just a standard LCD, a Samsung, which does claim HDR support. When I've watched things in HDR, I have been slightly less than impressed. I've not felt like it has added a huge amount.
It's similar to using it on the iPad Pros, the most recent ones. They exactly. Technically, they claim HDR support, and although the color range certainly meets the criteria, the brightness doesn't.
You need at least, I think, 1,000 nits of constant brightness.
Yeah. But before we go too much into the weeds, obviously this is about Sky. I think nature documentaries, much as was the case, I thought, for 3D, really benefits from technology like this, because there's just such an amazing breadth of content available. And it's not just about how big is your image and how many pixels do you have on the screen. Think about something like a cave with say light shining through a hole in the top of the cave from the outside world. Without HDR, you'll either have a nice blue sky that you can see, but the cave will be engulfed in darkness and will be hard to make out. Or you can have a very nice bit of cave action with some details of water falling off the stalactites or something on the roof of the cave, but the sky would be overexposed. And you can't really, with documentaries, unlike film where you can set up a scene to compensate for that a lot of the time with lighting and studio technology, you can't do that with nature documentaries by virtue of the fact that they're usually shot on one or maybe a couple of cameras because they take years to make. So having the ability to do these in HDR is just, I think it brings a huge numbers of possibilities to the content that isn't always, you know, I would say applicable to movies. I'm trying to differentiate the difference between shooting something in a studio where you can control for everything and shoot something in a cave where you're waiting months on end to find a particular spider
bat.
Or a bat. Exactly.
Not a spider. No one wants to see a spider.
No, true. Okay, well, you know, a dodo. You know, they're still waiting. They're still waiting. Okay, well, this is all coming out soon, so we'll include a link to the SkyQ website and the BBC story, of course, that we were quoting from at uktechshow.com in the show notes and in the MP3 description. I didn't see notes on price, so that may either be announced after this episode goes out, or it may just not be known yet at all. We just do know...
Included in that top tier tariff, which is expensive. So if you've got Ultra HD already, you should be covered, is my understanding of it.
I see. Well, any thoughts you have on this, of course, do let us know. hello@uktechshow.com. Time Out wrote that Suzuki presents at the drive-in. That's not a reference to the great rock band, but indeed a drive-in cinema franchise, which is coming to 12 cities around the UK this summer. The first screenings are going to be in South London this July. We don't know what the films are yet, and the season will end in East London, which is to the east of South London, well, sort of northeast from the south of London, in the east of London, in September. Time Out explained that the plan is to set up an LED screen and a system that will allow drivers, that is to say ticket holders who are in their cars, to be recognised by their registration plates to allow for a no-contact experience. Cadillacs are not mandatory, apparently. All cars will be parked the recommended 2 meter distance apart. Time Out also said there'll be some other entertainment too, which will include silent car discos, bingo, and stand-up comedy. It also said something that I'm hoping someone can explain to me. Milk duds aren't on the snack menu. What the hell is a milk dud?
Isn't it a sort of milky-flavoured, chewy sweet?
It might be.
Like you know, like those milk bottles you get in Haribo or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, those.
Right.
I think it's that kind of thing. It might be an American thing.
That's a very specific thing to say isn't on a snack.
I know. I don't. Maybe it's a tradition of drive-in movie theatres in America, but that doesn't make any sense because I'm sure popcorn is the only thing that is acceptable to eat.
Richard in the chat room is saying that it's actually not those milk bottles. They are chewy caramel things with chocolate coatings.
Oh, well, then I'm completely lost. I've no idea.
I wonder if Milk Dud is actually a reference to some kind of a film that involved drive-ins like Grease.
Good point.
And that it was referenced somewhere.
Well made. Yes, you're probably right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But anyway, there will be food delivery apps available, so you can order hot and cold food and things to your car. And it's also going to be in Birmingham, Manchester, Glasgow, Leeds, Newcastle, Edinburgh, Southampton, Brighton, Cardiff, Bristol and Liverpool. So there are two reasons to talk about this. It's not connected to the previous story about HDR. I have no idea if these screenings will be in HDR.
Almost certainly not.
I suspect they are not. But in fact, it's just a very, very weird world that we have now entered, where as a result of what's going on at the moment, which will go unmentioned, as is tradition on this show, people still want to go to cinemas, and apparently having a gigantic screen and Netflix at home and subscriptions at home for all these streaming services being through the roof, there is still a desire to go to cinemas. And even though London, which is famous for its ridiculous congestion and sort of inefficient use of streets when it comes to motor vehicles, it is now appropriate to create a drive-in that actually works. Mm. So that's one aspect to this. And the second aspect to this is that I just don't think being in a car watching a film is any good. I mean, what's the point? Isn't that going to be incredibly depressing?
No, because drive-in theatres in America are for teenagers who got their driving license at 16 and they want to go to a cinema and get off with a girl or a boy and have some privacy. I no one wants to watch a film like that. It's, I mean, it might be nice if you've got a convertible and you go and sit out in the winter, the summer sun in the evening. Once the sun goes down, it's nice and warm. But primarily, I think it's for horny teens to go and not watch a film.
Hmm. Now, I haven't been a horny teen for quite a while. But I remember when I was, the car was never the attractive place to go. It's sort of up behind Solomon's Temple in Derbyshire, or in the
yeah,
woods.
Sure. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Next to where the teddy bears have their picnic, but only after they've left.
Defiling their picnic with your outdoor activities. You make a valid point, but it's a car is enclosed. If it's raining or cold, you can have the heating on. You know, there are advantages to cars, I would say. But you're not really a driver, are you?
So. Well, but Andy in the chat points this out right now, that the bigger reason was probably that I couldn't drive and still can't.
Yeah.
That is true, but I had friends who drove, and I didn't... I had
make
no
out
I...
with any of them.
Exactly, yeah. right, let's see. I think that story ran its course.
It is.
So to summarise, drive-in cinemas are coming to London.
I love that.
Well, when it rains in moron land, Ian, it pours. And that's because Engadget wrote this week that London's Trading Standards Office, along with the City of London Police, are attempting to stop the sale of a device that a company claims can protect people from the supposed dangers of 5G spectrum. And I say supposed in inverted commas there. There are no dangers of the 5G spectrum. Stephen Knight, Operators Director for London Trading Standards, told the BBC that it considers the roughly £300 device, which is called the 5G BioShield, a scam. Now, Engadget explained that the agency, and this agency is worth pointing out, it's their responsibility to protect consumers and businesses in London. It's working with the city's police department to get a court order now to take down the website of the company, which I'm not naming the name of because they don't deserve it, that sells the USB stick. And it says on its website that the product claims to provide protection for your home and family, thanks to the wearable holographic nanolayer catalyzer, blah, 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 through a process of quantum oscillation, the 5G BioShield USB key reharmonizes the disturbing frequencies arising from the electric fog induced by devices such as laptops, cordless phones, blah, blah, blah. £300. Now, I thought, okay, £300. Let's get around the fact that this is utter horse waste, for all the reasons we've talked about on the show before. Let's maybe just give them the benefit of the doubt in that this is a really, really good USB stick. You know, really high capacity flash, you know, super, super speedy flash, you know, so good you could use it as virtual RAM or something like that. And I found that there was a website of a company that does things like penetration testing and security maintenance and things like that. And they bought one of these things and tore it open. So I thought, shall we have a look at actually how good the USB key is? And it turns out it's a load of crap. And that's putting it politely. Now, I'm going to share pictures of this on the Teardown website in the Discord right now, so everyone who's listening live can see what it looks like. But I'll also be including this link in the MP3 description and at uktechshow.com, because you need to see it. It looks awful, absolutely terrible. It's clearly just a slightly rebadged, white-labeled USB stick, horribly designed. It's kind of a bit of perspexy, silvery color. It's horrible. It's obnoxious, really. Do you want to hazard a guess at how much memory this £300 USB stick has, Ian?
Well, I've read the script, so
oh,
I know.
All right.
Yes. Not a lot.
It's about 128 megabytes. megabytes.
That's useless not only for its intended purpose, but also for any secondary benefit that you might get from it.
Yeah. I couldn't even believe that anyone still makes 128 megabyte USB sticks.
I know, I just pulled one out of my machine that I plugged in a while ago, just lying around. It's 8 gig.
I mean, this podcast, when it's published to Patreon, the extended version, is about 80 megabytes in its own right. So that you would get one episode of this show, maybe
so
two at a push, on that USB stick.
We should do a deal with them and have the podcast put on it.
I mean, if anybody wants this, I will happily sell you
just
a USB stick per episode
for
300 quid.
Oh no, just, you know, don't be greedy. Just sell it for what it costs. But it's, you know, I'll Amazon it.
Yeah. So anyway, it's terrible as a product. It's terrible as a USB stick, and hopefully it's going to get pulled offline because it's worth at best a 2 or 3 quid. So it goes to show that
£16 for 10.
£16 for 10, okay.
Yeah.
And that's at retail, that's not trade.
That's
price.
Amazon, yeah. That's just the right. First result.
So if you bought them in bulk, you'd probably get them for about a quarter of that, probably less.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. Shocking. So if you see anybody talking about this, and the reason it in itself got talked about a little bit is because references to it were included in, I think it was a Glastonbury City report about 5G risks or something. They reference that such a product exists, and that's one of the reasons it became written about in the news this week. But I just wanted to make absolutely sure that nobody listening is under the impression that a USB stick like this can save you from threats that don't exist with technological claims that are as fabricated as the misinformation itself. So
I mean, this is baffling that people will buy into this. Someone in the chat, I think it was maybe Richard, said you kind of almost don't have a lot of sympathy for people that are prepared to buy this kind of stuff, you know, thinking it will help, when really there's just, first of all, no evidence there's a problem, and second of all, no evidence that there's a solution, because it's hard to solve a problem that doesn't exist, if you see what I mean. But yeah, I mean, people will spend money on what's her name, Gwyneth Paltrow's stones for your inside bits, which is ridiculous, and people will pay a lot of money for that kind of stuff. A fool and his money are easily separated, as the thing goes.
I mean, I remember setting up a business on eBay where I think I offered to sell compliments.
Well, that's a tangible thing. Although it's not, is it?
It's not, and that's why I wasn't allowed to sell it.
You got shut
down.
You're
not allowed to email a compliment every day. Well, somebody.
No, I suppose not. You could post it, though.
I know, but that was effort, and I was in it for the margin.
Well, of course. And I mean,
the margin on that was basically 100% pure profit.
Absolutely, yeah. Apart from the electricity it takes to fire up your computer to... I'm guessing you were living at home at this point.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
So your mum was paying for the electricity.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Charlotte makes a good point in the live chat that there are two different issues here. That people believe the 5G stuff because good tech education is rare, which is very, very true.
Yes.
And the Goop stuff sells because pressure is put on women to stay young and to be perfect,
absolutely.
Which again is very true. And I, you know, there's evidence for this when you see TV commercials about some kind of sanitary product, not a sanitary product, a cosmetic,
like
where
like
it says
a youth serum
contains
or something like that.
Oxpofen 6 or some other thing. And it's not that it doesn't contain that thing. It's just that thing is being used as a way of pulling wool over people's eyes, I feel. Like, oh, well, if it contains that chemical, that impressive sounding thing, then it must be good.
Right, so here, let me run something by you that is a counter proposal, and that's we accept that this is fleecing people who probably don't deserve to be fleeced for the most part. They're probably people who've bought into the lies and feel scared, which is a perfectly reasonable human reaction. But let's just say, you know, what if these people think they've got a problem, they buy this thing and it makes them feel better, then is there not some sort of argument to suggest that the placebo effect is perfectly valid?
I have no objection to the placebo effect. I have no objection to people indulging in homeopathy. What I object to with something like homeopathy is it being advised as an alternative to medicine.
It reminds me of another Mitchell and Webb sketch. Have you ever seen that one?
Is it
the homeopathic doctor? Oh, it's brilliant.
No.
You need to watch it. Anyway, carry on.
I don't remember that one. You know, at the end of the day, if something works, if you feel better because of something, then fair enough. But the issue is where people sell it as something, as an alternative to something that is, you know, medically validated and tested. You know, if you feel sad and someone comes to you and says, well, homeopathy will make you feel not sad, simply have a bit of this once a day and in a week's time you'll feel fine, and then in a week's time you feel fine, then I mean, I can't complain with that, really, if that works for you. But if you go to someone and say, well, the doctor says on this test I have a disease, but instead of having treatment for the disease, yeah, I'm going to have some diluted lemon juice or something like that.
Well, yeah, and this isn't that, though.
No,
but
it's not.
I take your point.
Anyway, any thoughts, always, as ever, welcome, hello, at uktechshow.com.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Well, we, of course, keep you up to date with all the important things that Ian and I think about, and occasionally things that happen in the British technology landscape. But do you know who's even more comprehensive when it comes to the global tech scene? It's Tom Merritt. Here he is being comprehensive.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we break down the concept of safe harbor, what the relevant law in the U.S. actually says, what Twitter's policy has been and how they changed it when they applied it to the president, and what the president's executive order on social networks can and cannot do. Also, we talk about TikTok cults, and I'm fairly certain we're all members of Step Chickens now. All this and what's left of our souls at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Yeah, Tom's as drained as we are when it comes to that.
He's got no choice, though.
But if you want to actually have a validated take on what's happening in where politics and technology coincide in a way that is of global interest, then listen to Tom, DailyTechNewsShow.com. Come to us, in fact, for stories about the several times that I almost got arrested making films as a teenager, or the weird letters that Ian managed to get hold of when he worked at the BBC. They are, in fact, all discussed on the extended version of this week's show, which is available exclusively to patrons at, patreon.com/UK Tech. We had a great discussion. Ian, how would you summarize that? Would it be me in a suit screaming outside a theater film me from a bush?
Yep. I would think that's a pretty fair summary.
And I would summarize your story as to do with Anne Robinson.
Yes.
But anyway, thank you to everyone who is supporting us at patreon.com/UKTech. And I hope some of you may be intrigued by those stories to go and support those, or rather support us and get those extra episodes. Ian, that will do it for this week, I think. You, as ever, have smelt fantastic. You've sounded even better. And I assume you're dressed well.
I am, actually.
As well.
Well, I mean, I'm dressed.
One of Noel Edmonds' hand-down shirts, I imagine.
No, I'm wearing T-shirts these days.
Oh, nice.
And I won't lie to you. I've got some lockdown weight to lose.
Yeah. Well, if you want to help Ian lose weight, well, there's nothing we can do about it. See you next week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.